All right, so for today, my topic, I guess, you could call it, is I really don't have a title, I guess, necessarily, but just looking and at some different, maybe popular stories or, reflecting on some of the popular, maybe you call them characters, but really they're not, they're people of the Old Testament that come to our mind very quickly. And I kind of got started thinking about this just reading through Hebrews 11 one day and talking about some of the faithful men of the Old Testament. And you really, I mean, when you go through that list there in Hebrews, you have the you get the picture of some pretty extraordinary people. And I think we build or have built the idea in our mind that they're maybe even extraordinary people. And yes, they did some incredible things, but when you go back and kind of maybe read through the stories and maybe take a little time and look a little closer and think about who these people were, and you see that they were probably a lot of them were the farthest thing from ordinary, or from, excuse me, from extraordinary people, before their purpose that God gave them was called into action. A couple of them I want to look at today. Again, very, very common guys and common names are Moses and David. There are a couple that I wanted to highlight today. And yes, David was, I mean, was there a better king than David? And was there a better leader than Moses? Those are some of the thoughts you had when you think about those guys. But really, where did they come from? And much different backgrounds in a lot of ways. But the one thing that we're going to see through a couple of these stories here that about God is that He shows up in a variety of ways, in a variety of places, and he doesn't he's not looking for the perfect moment as we see it, or even that perfect person, or a person that would is very fitting necessarily in our eyes, to do an extraordinary thing. These and we'll see. As we read some of this and go into some of this, these guys were not, they weren't in a holy place, or they weren't in a position of power or royalty, or these incredible guys that God looked upon them and saw, yeah, they're fit to do the job. Look what they've done. I'm going to give them this chance. But they, in fact, were very much the opposite, I feel like. So our first one, we'll look at Exodus chapter 3. We'll read a little bit here. Exodus chapter 3. And I won't go into way back into the detail of Moses just for time's sake of reading and stuff, but I want to start here in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 1, and then after we read a bit here, I want to discuss and look at some of the details of Moses here. Exodus 3, verse 1. Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. And now, behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you which I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. So I'm going to stop there. So talking about Moses, you know, Moses was, you can go briefly back to his birth, how he was, you know, he was hidden in the basket and among the reeds and was found by Pharaoh's daughter. And we know that he was, you know, was grown and raised, you know, with the Egyptians. And so that may, you know, maybe that you could say, well, that's different. And it is. And maybe Moses was, you know, was chosen for that as well. But also, we know that, excuse me, you know, why was Moses where he was at this point? I mean, he had killed an Egyptian that was abusing one of his fellow Hebrew men, and his fear of being in trouble for that, he ran away a long ways away. And this was a lot of years later, roughly around 40 years probably after that happened. So, and when you look at it, maybe from a non-biblical mindset, what do we have here with Moses? I mean, that guy's an ex-con, herding sheep on the backside of the mountain, you know, 40 years ago for this crime he committed 40 years ago. I mean, the guy's he's just hiding out, just living out the rest of his life, just being content and not worried about his Egypt or his people there. He doesn't want to go back there. I mean, he's probably, after this amount of time, has a pretty good sense of security of where he's at. He's not concerned about that. That was a past life. You know, they didn't come get me. I'm here now. He's married. He's got a wife and a family. He's working with his father-in-law. Very, kind of a, keeping a pretty low profile kind of guy here. And really, that's what he was. You know, he wasn't doing, you know, these wonderful things for God, and he wasn't this man of incredible faith and working miracles, and you know, he wasn't this big, you know, warrior defeating nations. And you know, what really had he accomplished at that point? When you think about it that way, he's a very common guy, and in some ways maybe a level or two below the average. And I think Moses has, you know, at this point has put himself there. So he has this event, I guess you could say, with the burning bush. And it was something that was out of the ordinary that caught his eye. And Moses, he turned and saw it, and he wondered, why is that thing not burning up? And he was curious enough, guys, to go to it. And that's when God calls out to him. And when God calls out to him and addresses him and tells him who he is, you know, I'm the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and Jacob. Moses understood who that was. When he first saw that bush and he saw that there was something extraordinary there, his first thought wasn't, oh man, God is here. You know, this is incredible. He didn't know what was going on. But when God spoke to him, you know, he understood and recognized who God was. And in the spot there where he tells him in verse 5, he says, do not come near here. He says, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place in which you're standing is holy ground. Why was that spot special? Was Moses doing anything there or had done anything there to make that holy, to make that special? Was that a special place? No, absolutely not. It was the backside of a mountain where he was tending sheep. It was holy because he was in the presence of God. God came to him and he said, where you're standing is holy. So an average guy took an opportunity that he saw something and he recognized something. And through that just that initial response, you know, triggered an incredible chain of events. You know, how would history have looked, or you know, how would things changed if he would have been, you know, afraid of the bush and ran away? Right? Curiosity there, his response allowed God to continue to work through this average guy named Moses. So, you know, he goes on and, you know, explains to Moses that he is God. And he goes on to talk about the situation in Egypt. I've heard the cries of the people, the affliction that they're getting from the Egyptians. And Moses is probably thinking, yeah, that's probably happening. I saw it when I was there all those years ago. And probably didn't have a hard time, you know, believing that or understanding how that could really be happening. And then God goes on to, you know, he's saying, I've heard the cries of these people. And then he's going to rescue them. In verse 10, he says, therefore, come now, I will send you to Pharaoh. And I can just imagine Moses at this point thinking to himself, well, hold on now. I mean, look where I'm at. I mean, it's not like he was there. It's not like he was part of that. I mean, a lot of people didn't even know Moses, I'm sure. You know, he had very little ties to those people anymore. That was a past life. A life that Moses, I think, was more than content to live out and not go back to Egypt. And I guess, you know, these are some assumptions I'm making, I guess, you know, obviously at this point too. His response are in verse 11, and understandably, I think, he says, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? I mean, do we understand who Pharaoh was? I mean, that guy was the leader of the world. What Pharaoh said is what happened. People lived and died on the word of Pharaoh. So it's understandable for Moses to think, well, who am I to go tell Pharaoh, yeah, that's going to happen, right? I'm going to go talk to Pharaoh and he's going to, and he's, and I'm going to bring these people out of Egypt. What is God's response to him? Does he go down the list of qualifications that Moses has? Does he, you know, spend quite a bit of time talking Moses into it? Well, Moses, actually, you know, I came to pick you because this and this and this, and I think you can do this and this. And what is his response, though? He says, certainly, I will be with you. Pretty incredible, I think, for God to be able to do that. With a what you would probably to the human eye or the untrained eye would be an extremely unqualified man to do this job. And as you know the story of Exodus more, and you know, you even see the understanding that, you know, Moses isn't a good speaker, the guy has a hard time talking even, and he's gonna lead all these people. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why Moses shouldn't be able to do this. And there really isn't a good, realistic reason why he's given this task or why he's able to accomplish this, other than the simple fact that God said, I will be with you. So we have an extremely ordinary, plain, unqualified person to accomplish a task that was literally going to change the world. And that's what it did. When that nation of people left Egypt, that was the the beginning of a chain of events that shaped history. All through one man that God told him, "I'm going to be with you." Now, also, I mean, we understand, you know, from that point on, Moses, his faith was tested, and obviously it was greatly increased. You know, Moses became a man that was extremely faithful to God, and was able to accomplish some, I mean, incredible things. It's not because he was able to do these things on his own. It's not that God raised him up from the time he was a baby and prepared him for this task and spent years and years developing these great characters of Moses and making him into this wonderful leader. And it was just an obvious choice it's Moses' time to go do this job now. He's been made to do it. Farthest thing from it. He's as ordinary as they could get. And like I said, maybe a little bit lower. You know, he was an ex-convict shepherd. Shepherds in general weren't extremely highly looked upon in those days just in themselves. But even that, I mean, he was just working for his father-in-law. I mean, he's just as simple as you can get. That's the idea that we really see here. And he was able to accomplish amazing things simply for the fact that God was with him, not because he was an outstanding individual prior to that. So I guess kind of my theme, I guess, with a couple of these guys, it's, you know, they weren't called because of their greatness. They were made great because they were called. And that's really, I think, one thing for us to really think about. The other example I wanted to look at today as well was David. Again, very, very, maybe one of the most common famous stories in the Bible is when David kills Goliath. And again, you know, just when you start thinking about that story, I mean, David was this heroic kid, right, that came and killed Goliath. And by saying that, yeah, you're right by saying that. But let's take a little deeper look at who this guy that David was in this moment. Turn to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 17. And I'm going to read maybe, was it all this chapter? Not quite, I guess. A lot of this chapter, kind of a long read, and kind of it's going to kind of show the whole story. And just kind of, as we read through this, just try to kind of pick up on some of the things of who David was, maybe, as we start here. Let's go to verse 1 of 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah, and they camped between Succoth and Azekah and Ephedamin. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. And the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. And he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine, and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." Again, the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was a son of the Ephraite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had eight sons. And Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. And the three older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to battle, and the names of these three sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the second to him, Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. And David was the youngest. Now the three oldest followed Saul. But David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. And the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. Then Jesse said to David his son, take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their 1,000 and look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. For Saul and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So David arose early in the morning and left the flock with the keeper and took the supplies and went to Jesse and commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. As he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is the uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in accord with his word, saying, thus it will be done for the man who kills him. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David and said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle. But David said, what have I done now? Was it not just a question? Then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing, and the people answered the same thing as before. When the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with the Philistine. Then Saul said to David, you are not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and may the Lord be with you. And Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head and clothed him with armor. And David girded his sword over the armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. And David took them off. And he took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch. And his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with his shield bearer in front of him. Then the Philistine looked and saw David. he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you have come with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is God and that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by the sword or the spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give into our hands. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead, so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. And David ran and took over the Philistine and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. Okay, so I know it was kind of a long read there, but that was just kind of the whole story in its entirety, I guess you could say. And so David becomes this great hero in this moment. But let's take a moment to look at who David was maybe prior to this. He was a son of Jesse, the youngest of eight. So there was multiple brothers older than him. In fact, three of the oldest were in battle, were in the army, and David was carrying out a wish of his father. You know, take this stuff to your brothers, check on them, see how things are going, come back, give me the report. That's what he was doing. In the meantime, he was tending the flock of sheep that belonged to his father. So David was not, he was not a guy that was, you know, into the army, or, you know, he wasn't even a leading man of his family. He wasn't someone that was looked upon as really as anyone. In fact, when he went and you know what you know how did his brothers even kind of greet him? I mean, they were, in short, they were annoyed that he was there. What are you doing here? You just came to, you're just trying to catch a peek at this battle that's happening here, and you don't even belong here. That was kind of the, you know, that's what you get from their response. But while he's there, and he hears this. This has been going on for 40 days now. Goliath comes down and challenges them, and again tells him, send somebody out here and fight me. And if they win, we'll be your servants. And if I win, you'll be our servants. That was the challenge that was going on. And this was presented to the entirety and the complete body of the army of the nation of Israel. And this was not just a few guys. This was not just, you know, a weak portion of the army. This was the might of the army of Israel in its entirety here. The God that Goliath is challenging. And did David know about this Goliath man before this happened? I'm not sure. You know, maybe the story has started to spread. It's been going on for a month or more now. But while he is there, he hears this challenge. And you can almost kind of see David as he hears this, a little frustration maybe. Here he is standing in the midst of the entire force of the army of his nation, and he hears this challenge and he asks the question, In verse 26 there, it says, "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" So here he is standing in the presence of all these men and his older brothers that are questioning why he's even there. And he shouldn't even be here. You're just a youth, right? And we're not going to get into how old David was, but because some people think he was 12, but I don't know why they think that, because it's nowhere in Scripture. But he was a young man. He wasn't maybe you could say a fighting age yet. But he was also a very, very capable young man as well, too. And it bothered him when Goliath came and gave him this challenge. I mean, and he probably, and you know, maybe he didn't, maybe he wasn't thinking this, but I think he very possibly looking around at that army thinking, what a bunch of cowards. You guys are the army of the living God, and you're letting this guy taunt you day in and day out. This is just, again, this isn't the lead soldier. This isn't the king. This isn't the commander of the army. This isn't someone that is in any position to question the ability or the strength or the resolve of this army. He has no qualifications to be asking that question, other than the simple fact that he was zealous for his God. And it bothered him when they were being taunted. Very unqualified, I guess you could say, individual to be in this position. And we see his response here. He has an opportunity. He could have probably listened to his brother and went home and told the story to his dad. Nobody would have thought twice about that. You know, probably he could say, well, that's probably what he should have done. But he sees an opportunity here to stand up for God. And why should he think he could do it? And that's what Saul asks him too. He says, you're just a youth. This guy's been a soldier for years. And look at him. I mean, the guy's huge. What are you going to do? And he tells him, when there was a bear or there was a lion that took one of my father's sheep, I went and I rescued that sheep. And in verse 36, he says, your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. He knew that of what his abilities were. Maybe he didn't have a full idea of what it takes to fight a guy like Goliath. But what he has before in his past, though, he has stood up to extreme adversity. It takes guts to do that. I mean, honestly, if I had a stick and a sling and a bear came and took one of the sheep, I'd probably like, you know what, that's just one less sheep we're going to have. That'd be a very common response, right? I mean, it's like, well, I'm going to give you that one, bear. But no. He went and rescued and destroyed that enemy. So David trusted himself when nobody else did. And he knew that God was going to help him. And he had faith that God was going to protect him. And he wasn't going to leave there that day with this Goliath guy challenging them. And he basically said, all right, none of you guys want to go do it, I'll go do it. So Saul takes him and puts all his armor on. Well, you're going to need all this stuff if you're going to go fight him. And he can't even move. Can't even function. So he says, you know what, I can't deal with this. Takes it all off, goes and gets his stones and his sling, and goes to meet Goliath. What a challenge. Goes out in front of the greatest warriors of that nation. And how did that make them feel? Could you feel any more gutless at this moment if you were those guys? That's my thought anyway. And he goes and he tells Goliath in verse 44 there, Goliath said to David, says, come to me and I will give you your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Verse 46, David's response is, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. What do you think Goliath was thinking at that time? Yeah, good luck, I'm sure is what he was saying. Go ahead and do that. David had a very small weapon, but used in the right way was extremely effective. And he took maybe that was his edge. Maybe that was his advantage. Nobody was concerned about him or worried about him. Maybe that's why he was able to accomplish this incredible thing. So we see a guy that was not qualified for this job in any aspect, whether it's his size, his strength, his age, his experience, what he's accomplished. And, you know, and I guess you could say that, you know, the qualifications that he gave Saul, that he killed the bear and the lion, that might have been something only David knew. It wasn't necessarily a story that, you know, he was this incredible guy, or he was a great shot with the slingshot. It was just who he was. He was just being a shepherd. He was looking after the flock, wasn't he? Whether it was the bear or the lion, or whether it was the nation of Israel, he was willing to face that danger and to eliminate the enemy. And, you know, and as the story goes, and, you know, you study and read the life of David, I mean, he became an incredible warrior and an incredible king and accomplished incredible things. But in this moment, he was not that guy. 40 years after this, yeah, David might have been the guy that they called and said, hey, let's go get David to deal with this guy. But in this moment, he was just an annoyance that he was even there. Extremely unqualified to do something extremely extraordinary. He was a young guy, just a shepherd, but he was determined. He was faithful, and he had zealous for God. I think that's that was his edge. He did something extremely fascinating, you could say almost. Other one I want to look at today briefly, and was in Joshua chapter 1. And I'm not going to go into the accolades of Joshua, but I just want to see the very beginning here and the qualifications and what he had that made him a great leader. We know that he followed in the footsteps of Moses. He was the one that was appointed leader. And let's just look here in Joshua chapter 1. Let's read, start in verse 5. He says, no man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possessions of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you shall have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So he's given his, you know, very brief instructions here, I guess you could say. And he tells Joshua, be faithful. Do according to the law which Moses commanded you. Why was Joshua able to be, again, such an incredible guy? He was just one of the young guys that came out of Egypt, he was made into a wonderful leader for these people and conquered many, many things. And what was his qualification? God says, be strong and courageous, and you're going to give these people possessions, which I swore to the fathers before them. He tells them, this is what you're going to do. Verse 5 there, he says, I will be with you. That's exactly what he told Moses. He didn't, at this moment, explain to him why he was this chosen leader or the qualifications that he had. He didn't have to talk him into it. He was told, I will be with you. Is that not enough? Is that not what Moses had? And ultimately, when we look at David, is that not what David had with him? And yes, you could say, well, he had done some things in the past that maybe qualified him. But ultimately, God was with him. And when you think about that, you know, don't put yourself in a category or in a box as a person that can't do things. Don't say to yourself, well, you know, who am I? That was Moses' response. Well, who am I to do that? I can't do this. I can't do that. I'm too young. I'm too old. I'm too weak. I don't have understanding. I don't have knowledge. I don't know things. Whatever the case might be, don't put yourself in that box. Because just as God has said to these men, I am with you, He is with us as well. Take notice of the opportunities around us that God presents as well. Take advantage of the opportunities to be strong. Seek opportunities to be someone. And don't always just look at your weaknesses and have the attitude, well, who am I? When Moses is talking to God, and he asks him the question, he said, well, who am I to, you know, when I go, who am I supposed to say that sent me? What am I here for? And God's response was, you tell them I am sent you. That's all people needed to know. He was there from God, and God was with him. So I wanted to jump ahead and highlight this idea here one more time, Matthew chapter 11. You go to verse 11 of Matthew 11. Jesus is speaking here. He says, truly I say to you, among these born of women, has not arisen anyone greater than John the Immerser. Yet he who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. So we talked about arguably three of the more incredible men of the Old Testament. And Jesus is saying, of all of the people there has been, John is greater than any of them. And then he goes on to say, the least in the kingdom is greater than he. Think about that. Think about a guy like Moses or David or Joshua or Noah or Abraham. And, you know, you can go down the list however you'd like. Jesus is telling people that you guys can be greater than them. You are greater than them. What does that mean for us? God was with them. That's why they were great, right? Who is with us? As Christians, what do we have? We have the Holy Spirit. We have Jesus in us. God is in us. He is with us. His Spirit is with us every moment, everywhere we go. Why can't we be great? Why can't we do things? I'm not saying we need to go out and, you know, start wars and be, you know, commanders of armies and things like that, but spiritually, why can't we be great? Why can't we be incredible? It doesn't have to be, you know, well, I'm not a preacher, or I'm not an evangelist, or, I'm not qualified to do that. You know, that's somebody else's job. It's easy for us to look at that. And it's easy for us to see, well, this guy here, he's way more qualified than I am. Why do we have to doubt that? Why can't we have the understanding that God is with us? we can be great if we allow him to be. So take opportunity to find those moments and to push ourselves and to have faith and reminder that God is with us. And I think we can be surprised what we can accomplish. We might not have stories written about us that we see about these men in the Old Testament, but we can accomplish great things for the kingdom. And I think that's something for us to think about, that when you read these stories, think about these people. They were just normal people. And they weren't special until God was with them. And remember that we have him with us each and every day. So those are my thoughts this morning. As we go on here, let's pray together, shall we? Heavenly Father, Lord, just thank you for the opportunity we have to be assembled today. We just think about Jesus and know that we can have him within us. We're just thankful we have the Holy Spirit. Just help us to remember that and draw our strength from that, Father, and to know that there's nothing in this world we can't overcome through you. Just give us that that confidence that we have, that we should have through Jesus, Lord. We just pray now in his name. Amen.